and welcome to NextPod, VP Next Gen's podcast made for veterinary students and young professionals who want to know what's next. I'm your host, Sarah Said, and today we'll be talking about an exam that is on every vet student's mind, the North American Veterinary Licensing Exam, also known as NAVLE. And here to give us some tips is Dr. Elizabeth Johnson-Million, the Assistant Director of Outreach and Engagement at International Council for Veterinary Assessment. Welcome, Dr. Million.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. Thrilled to be here. And you crushed that introduction. There's a lot of words, the acronyms, the letters. they're just flying everywhere. So kudos to you.
Well, thank you. So before we start the podcast, usually we ask our guest about themselves. So I just want to know kind of who you are. How'd you get to where you are today? Like, what college did you attend? And why did you even join the ICVA in the first place?
Ooh, that's such a good question. It's a big question. I'm terrible at doing this in an abbreviated fashion. So since I can like see you, no one can see me out in the podcast world. Sarah, just like do the little like hand to the neck action, like cut me off whenever I'm like rambling. Okay. Promise me that you'll do that. So I am from the great state of Tennessee. I went to the University of Tennessee for my undergraduate studies and for vet school. Loved my time at UT. I'm a diehard Vol fan, Vol for life, as they call us. And whenever I was in vet school, I became super active with the student AVMA or SAVMA. If you're not familiar with the AVMA, it stands for the American Veterinary Medical Association. So this is just like the student sector of the AVMA. I try to be really cognizant of acronyms. I really want to make sure that I always define acronyms. So, because I know some of your listeners may not be as familiar. So I try to be really good about that. Catch me if I don't. But I was super active with SAVMA. I was a delegate for several years, and then I served on the National Executive Board with SAVMA. I did not even know that that world existed before vet school. Like if you are a pre-vet student or a technician student or anything along those lines, like look into this because it's incredible. The opportunities that are afforded if you get involved in it. It was pitched to our class whenever I was a first year vet student. I was like, hey, do you like traveling places and meeting people and whatever? And I think most of us would agree that yes, we mostly do, not necessarily in a global pandemic, but that's a different time. So I got super active with SAVMA and sort of built my network and determined that this picture that I had of what I wanted to do whenever I went to vet school, what I wanted to do after vet school, you know, I was like, I'm going to be a practitioner. I'm going to practice. I'm going to be a clinician and I can do obviously work on different species. I really enjoyed working with horses, but then I kind of pivoted more to companion animal. And then working and doing SAVMA related opportunities just opened my eyes to the non-clinical realm, if you will, of veterinary medicine and all the different opportunities there. I really enjoyed mentoring students and working in that capacity. So then fast forward to graduation, I knew I wanted to get clinical experience because that is, I think, important. I wanted to see what that was like and kind of confirm if being a clinician is what I wanted to do, or if this little kind of nagging voice in my head, like, hey, maybe you're going to do something non-clinical was going to come to fruition. I worked in a small animal clinical practice in Houston, Texas, really enjoyed that and quickly determined that being an associate vet was not going to be my forever long term. It just did not give me like not the literal sense of ownership because you're an associate, so you're not an owner, right? But it didn't give me the sense of I'm choosing my destiny and I'm making calls here because a lot of it was just out of my hands. You know, what things are available, what can you do as an associate? You don't have as much control over that. So I was like, I think I am going to consider other opportunities. And at that time, you know, timing is everything and or almost everything, I feel like. At that time, there was a position that opened up at a new vet school, Lincoln Memorial University College of Veterinary Medicine, if any of you guys are listening who are going there or who currently go there. They were about to graduate their first class. It was still a new school at that time. And there was a position at LMU that was being published and posted called the position was the Assistant Dean of Student Success. And I read this position and I was like, wow, that sounds really phenomenal. sounds like something right up my alley. And maybe they would consider me for this job in like 20 years. You know, I never in a million years thought that I should, you know, consider applying. But the friends that I had gained and this network that I had built in my time in vet school and Savin and post-grad, literally, Sarah, it was nuts. All these people were like, Elizabeth, you have to apply. This is perfect for you. Like, look at the mission of the college and they're serving the greater Appalachian footprint. That's just so you, yada, yada. So again, long story short, I ended up applying for the job, not expecting anything to come out of it. The application process, the interview, then like 6 months later, because academia takes forever, I got the job, which is crazy, crazy, crazy. It just goes to show, apply for things, see what doors are open. Sometimes you got to find windows and push doors open, but you never know what can happen. And in that position, there were several things that I did, but a big part of that position was NAVLE and NAVLE prep. Okay, so getting students prepared, especially since it's a newer school, and NAVLE pass rates are a part of the accreditation process for colleges of veterinary medicine, like for better or for worse. I always like to say that. I'm not saying that that's the way it should be. That's just the way it is currently, that the accreditation process for AVMA accredited schools is a part of that is NAVLE pass rates. So I kind of helped to create this like NAVLE prep rotation and different NAVLE prep initiatives. And I never in a million years wanted to become like the NAVLE girl, you know, but it was just sort of out of necessity. I had to become a content expert on all things NAVLE licensing, answering questions. And I was constantly talking to the ICVA team, like constantly on the phone, emailing them, all of that. And several years into that position, I determined that I needed to move geographically because I was at that time engaged and needed to, you know, hopefully the result of engagement is that you do get married. So I got married and moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and actually approached the ICVA, approached the CEO, Dr. Heather Case, to determine if she wanted to let me do what I was doing at one school, but sort of for a broader audience, for vet schools, licensing boards, vet students, NAVLE candidates globally, that kind of thing. So I've been in this role with the ICVA doing outreach to all of our stakeholders for over 2 years, 2.5 years. So it's been a lot of fun. And I know that I really just rambled on with that, but that's my story. Oh,
it's such a good story. And the reason, you know, I love to ask people this question of how did you get to where you are today is because sometimes life throws things at you that you really don't expect or see for yourself. And you end up finding a position and you're like, you know what? I really like this, or this is working for me. So I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, exactly what you said. And if you had asked me in 2013, hey, Elizabeth, did you know that one day you're going to work for an assessment organization? I'd be like, whoa, that's not part of the plan, but here I am.
Yeah, it happens, right? And it's so funny. I love how you just called yourself a NAVLE girl.
Yeah, here I am.
Yeah, you're the perfect person for this. So I want to start off like from the basics. What is the NAVLE for people who don't know?
Beautiful. I love that question. And I think it's so important because we as a profession, and I hear this a lot in among veterinarians and vet students, people tend to throw around the word boards. Have you noticed that? Oh, I'm taking my boards exam, yada, yada, yada. And I'm really curious as to where we started calling these high stakes exams board exams, but I get a little freaked out by that because if you're just calling it your boards exam, you're kind of cheating yourself of explaining like what it is. So NAVLE, again, being an acronym, we love acronyms in veterinary medicine, stands for North American Veterinary Licensing Exam. So within that acronym, it tells you what it is, which is beautiful. So let's talk about it. North American. I like to make this joke that for those of us who are in the US, North America includes another country, which is Canada. So we have to remember that this is for the US and Canada. And then, so North American, V for veterinary. So this is for veterinary professionals, individuals who want to be and who are veterinarians. Licensing. The L, in my opinion, is the most important letter in the acronym. Licensing. What does that mean? Licensing means that you are legally able to practice veterinary medicine. You're able to treat, diagnose, do surgery, all of those things that are entailed in within the practice of veterinary medicine within a clinical sense. That being said, I want to make very clear to all my listeners, there are veterinarians out there in the US and Canada and across the world, but for the context of this conversation in the US and Canada, who are not licensed practitioners, who are lobbying on Capitol Hill, which is not a clinical position, who are working for the US Department of Agriculture, inspecting slaughter facilities. That is not necessarily a clinical role that requires a license in most instances. Many pathologists who are not actively practicing, they don't need a license, right? So I want to emphasize that if you go to veterinary school and graduate and have met all of the criteria for that program, you are a veterinarian. You are a DVM, or for my Penn students, a VMD. You are a doctor of veterinary medicine. Whether or not you are a licensed practitioner is where this exam comes into play. Okay, so the licensure thing, I kind of get on a soapbox about that because some folks who have not taken the exam or who are don't pass the exam on one or two attempts, they tend to say, oh, am I a real doctor? Yes, if you went to school and subjected yourself to veterinary school, you are absolutely a veterinarian. It's just the licensure piece. And then E is the exam. So North American Veterinary Licensing Exam. The NAVLE is meant to be a threshold, a minimum competency for entry-level clinical practice, Sarah, okay? So entry-level is what I emphasize. You are not expected to have a large or advanced knowledge or mastery of clinical practice whenever you take this exam, because we know that the vast majority of folks who are taking this exam have not yet practiced on their own. So we are creating the exam with that in mind. The NAVLE has to be two things. And this is a little bit big picture, maybe more than anybody wants to know, but while we're here, why not, right, Sarah? The NAVLE has to be psychometrically sound and legally defensible. And you guys are like, whoa, snoring already, but come back to me because this is interesting. This is a high stakes exam, right? I told you guys entry level clinical practice, minimum threshold for that. But it has to be psychometrically sound and legally defensible. So psychometrics is a field of study that is able to objectively measure your skills, knowledge, like all of these different things. And it's an honest to God, like science, right? That they can say, like, objectively, where are you at this point in your educational career? And does this exam capture that? They are able to, there are these individuals who are psychometricians. It's a real word. It's a real career. Who, what they do is they are constantly looking at the data and all of this to determine if the exam meets that standard. And then legally defensible, obviously, is the exam fair? Is it a reasonable assessment? The last thing I'll say, Sarah, and this is, again, I'm rambling and I apologize, is that the NAVLE is meant, in essence, to protect the public, right? It's a licensing exam. Who is able to practice veterinary medicine in practices or in a sense that you are doing hands-on work with animals and the public, in some instance, humans as well. This is something I'm really passionate about because by taking this exam and passing this exam, you are saying that you are able to go and do and practice things to protect the public and to relieve suffering, relieve pain, prevention of pain and suffering. So we're able to say that by taking and passing this exam, we're preventing individuals from practicing who could inflict pain and suffering unnecessarily, right? So it's really impressive and awesome if you are even eligible to take the exam and to take and pass the exam. So that's the NAVLE. And then as far as the, do you want me to talk about like the, what the test itself looks like?
Actually, my second question for you is like, how are students evaluated? Like, what does that actually look like?
Beautiful. Yes. So the NAVLE currently is a 360 question, multiple choice, computer-based exam. So 360 questions, all multiple choice. All multiple choice. I like to emphasize that. All multiple choice. And it is computer based. Usually individuals take it in Prometric testing centers, which are all across the world that you can take it. So just because you want to get licensed in the US or Canada, you can take the exam in Ireland, in Australia. You know, there are vet schools there too, of course. So it's the exam is 360 questions, and then 300 of those questions are what your score is based off of. Only 300, only quotes, right? Still a lot of questions. 60 of the questions are what we call pretest items, which means that they are newer questions that we're still getting statistics on to determine if we want them to be incorporated in future exams as scored items. And then the NAVLE is broken down based on a practice analysis, which is just this huge survey that we send out every several years to practitioners all over the US and Canada to determine what does veterinary medicine look like for practitioners in this point in time, which is really cool, that several years ago through the practice analysis survey that we did, we determined that aquaculture, so working on aquatic species, is a new and emerging field that we have many more practitioners going into than we ever have before. And I think like looking forward, I don't know if you're familiar with the beekeeping field and how that's sort of emerging for veterinarians, which is so cool. But we're able to determine through these practice analysis surveys, hey, like what is the current picture of veterinary medicine? And that is what we map our exam for. Through a blueprinting process. Through that blueprinting process, then you can separate it, the NAVLE, into two things. And whenever it comes to NAVLE preparation, this is big picture what I tell candidates to focus on. You can break it down into species, obviously, because as veterinarians, we work on multiple species generally, and then competencies. Competencies and competency domains, I think, are just a fancy way of saying learning objectives. Most vet students are familiar with learning objectives. It's basically just statements that you see at the beginning of like a semester. Like by the end of this learning unit, I will be able to tie a modified Miller's knot or what have you, right? But these learning objectives are a little bit broader. So it's like, can you, Sarah, take diagnostic information, you know, can you take physical exam findings and make a diagnostic plan for a patient, right? Can you do that? Most vet students, once you get into your advanced clinical year, should be able to do that. So check that off. And then the species, we just look at what species are most veterinarians working on most of the time, right? Which, no surprise to you, dogs and cats are at the top of the list. Then we got horses, then we got cattle. And then as you go down the list, you got like pigs and small ruminants. Aquatics are more at the very end of that list because it's a very small subset. But that's how the NAVLE is created, based on the blueprint, species, competencies. And then it's all kind of created into this high stakes multiple choice exam. So that's the NAVLE.
Wow. No, you explained it like beautifully. Thank you so much, because I think it's important for people to understand what to expect, because I think it can get so overwhelming, right? This huge exam that there's so much pressure, and then you don't know where to start when it comes to studying and stuff. And I noticed on the ICVA website that you have practice questions as well as like a practice exam, I think. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about that, and how important is that for people who are studying to use those resources?
Absolutely. So this is something, again, there's a lot out there for high stakes exam prep. This is not unique to our profession. If you are taking any kind of SAT, ACT, if you're taking the licensing exam for physicians, attorneys, there's bar prep. So there's plenty of resources out there for NAVLE prep. There's like third party services who have created these board prep programs, if you will, right? And those are great. I think that they're good. I don't really talk about them at length. I get a lot of candidates who say, oh, which one should I choose? Da, da, da. And I'm like, okay, I got to kind of keep an arm's distance away from them because of course, you know, conflict of interest. I don't want to mention anything that I shouldn't and I can't, but whenever it comes to preparing for the NAVLE, I think that utilizing the source of the information, which as like the ICBA is the source of the information. we are the ones who are helping and taking a large hand in creating the NAVLE and working with our subject matter experts to write the questions, that kind of thing. And that's why, Sarah, like I love that you mentioned the practice exams. So we have available on our website several preparation resources that I think are just so hugely important. So if your listeners are like, tuning in right now and they're, you know, listening to this podcast, probably like triple speed, like I do with my podcasts. I really encourage you guys to pay attention to this part because this is the most important, I think, of everything. We have three resources available or three groups of resources available. We have a species and diagnoses list, a competency domains list, and then self-assessments or basically practice exams. I'm going to talk about the practice exam since you brought that up. And then I definitely want to place emphasis on the first two, maybe a little bit later. But the self-assessments that we have available are 200 question practice exams that are available for purchase. I think they're between like $50 and $75, if I'm not mistaken, on our website. They're 200 question exams. You can do it in a timed, purchase it and take it as a timed exam because the NAVLE is timed. Or you can take it self-paced. It's completely up to you. And these are 200 basically retired NAVLE questions or questions that are still valid and good questions, but we saw value in putting them into a self-assessment for candidates to learn, what does the NAVLE feel like? Like, what are these questions like? How should I approach them? That's what the self-assessments are for. And I think that talking about the self-assessments and what they are, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. It's a practice NAVLE. There is, you know, that you won't find another test out there that's as close to the NAVLE as these self-assessments are. I think that it's even more important whenever we're talking about like the self-assessments themselves to talk about the timing of when to take them. Okay. I know from our analytics, from our website and from our ordering that a lot of people take a self-assessment like maybe a couple of days or a week or two before they take the NAVLE. And I want to encourage you to give yourself a little bit more time, right? Consider taking a self-assessment toward the beginning of your preparation, several months ahead of taking the NAVLE. Take a self-assessment maybe like 4 to 6 weeks out. And then preferably, coming from me, your friend Elizabeth, who's taken the NAVLE before, maybe consider taking your last self-assessment no closer than 2 weeks out. Because if you get that self-assessment score report, which Sarah, it's really cool. After you take a self-assessment, you get a score report that looks almost identical to the score report that you get on the NAVLE. The difference is that you get a projected score range. So it tells you, you know, you took the self-assessment, congratulations. Based on this self-assessment, your projected NAVLE score range at this point in time is between like a 450 and a 490. It's like a 40 to 50 point range there. And we have statistical data that shows that that is predictive of your performance if you took the NAVLE at that time. We know that. We have really good research to back it up. So the self-assessments are huge. Maybe even bigger, just to summarize, is when you choose to take them, because you have to allow yourself time to like make adjustments, right? Like maybe there was a blind spot and you didn't spend enough time focusing on like feline internal medicine or something, like who knows, but that's what the self-assessment should be used for, to help you identify, hey, I need to like maybe work a little bit on this, work a little bit on this, and kind of fine tune things before you take the big test. So, yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of timing that students will have to take the test, like how does that work? Should students like kind of time themselves as they're doing certain practices? Is that like important? Is the quickness and the speed of how they think?
Beautiful question. And I missed this in my NAVLE overview. Apologies. I should have covered that, but I was just so excited to talk about everything else. So the NAVLE is the 360 question multiple choice exam, right? We already covered that. And yes, it is timed. It is broken down into six sections of 60 questions. Okay. Say that 8 times fast because I say it a lot. 6 sections of 60 questions, which I believe totals 360. Those sections, those 60 question sections are timed. You get 65 minutes per 60 question section. Okay. That averages out to just over a minute per question if you care about that, right? So as you are practicing, take, you know, with practice questions early on, with like reading comprehension, being able to read a question and pull what you need out of it. Absolutely. Timing yourself should definitely be a part of your preparation. The self-assessment that we have available on our website, all of those can be purchased based on the timing schedule that is the same as the NAVLE. You have the ability to do that, which I highly recommend. And then many of the third-party prep services that I was speaking to, they have like timed exams as well. But I think that the best thing that you can do, you know, well, you might be thinking to yourself, okay, Elizabeth, well, there's only 3 self-assessments available. So, you know, that's only however many questions that you can take. You're right. But if you're going to focus on the timing aspect of it, or if that is a concern that you have in preparation for the NAVLE, because that's a pretty quick turnover time, right? If that's a concern that you have, I just strongly encourage you to practice your reading comprehension and being able to look at a question and say, what are they asking? What are the important things? What are they asking? What are the important things? Like, pew, 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 pew. Can you quickly ascertain what the information in the question is important to answer it? And then, you know, move on, that kind of thing. So yes, timing is important.
So that's interesting. I love that you mentioned to pull out the important things. How do you have tips? And you mentioned that you took the NAVLE yourself. So obviously based on your experience as well, do you have tips on how to break down a question? Like, should students like highlight maybe the numbers or the terminology, or, you know, like physically highlighting or something like that? Like, is there something that can be practically used, if that makes sense? Like one of those.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that you're thinking about that for the listeners and for our future NAVLE takers. So since I'm a veterinarian, I don't consider myself a learning specialist, right? But we happen to have several impressive PhDs on our staff who I'm working on some exciting YouTube content for. So check out our YouTube channel for more coming soon in 2022. But for my purpose, because I try to speak to everything practically, I would just say that NAVLE questions are generally structured very similarly, which is good, right? We want to be able to look at something and be like, okay, this is the same structure. I don't have to like relearn what's being asked, or like what, you know, the pattern, if you will. The NAVLE questions that you're going to see are going to most frequently be clinical vignettes or clinical cases. So it's going to be a question like, you're an associate veterinarian in a small animal clinical practice, a 10-year-old female spayed mixed breed dog comes into your practice. This dog's been, you know, hit by a car or had some sort of traumatic injury, and you need to determine the next diagnostic step for this patient. You have already done a CBC chemistry, you know, some sort of baseline blood work. And then it might show you the baseline blood work. Based on this blood work, you know, what would be the next step? And maybe the baseline blood work shows some sort of scary, very acute anemia. And you're thinking to yourself, ooh, where's that blood going? Where, you know, if the blood isn't in the blood vessels, where did the blood go, right? Is it just hemorrhaging? Does the dog have a hemoabdomen? I'm not going to get into the semantics of all of that, because I'm definitely not an emergency practitioner. But whenever you're looking at these questions, just being able to pull out that information and asking yourself, hey, they put a CBC chemistry here, which is a type of blood work that you can run. I'm going to look at this because every piece of information that is listed in an NAVLE question is there to help you answer the question. The questions cannot be written in a tricky format. If there is a radiograph or a piece of blood work or an image, or if there is any information in the question in writing, it's there to help you. So I think that in terms of what information can Elizabeth give that is helpful to preparing, it is to read the question as it is written and think, what is this question asking me? And look at the information presented and know that there is one correct answer, only one. One correct answer based out of the four or five that are available, and being able to say, I'm going to take this information based off of what I know and say the most likely correct answer here is, you know, one of the options, answer it quickly and move on. Don't get too bogged down in it. But the clinical vignette structure is typically going to be the signalment, which if you are not familiar with what that is, that typically like the age, the breed, the reproductive status, sometimes, you know, female spayed, female intact, male neutered, male intact. And then I think they already say age. Take that information, and then it's going to give you maybe a brief clinical presentation, maybe a medical history if you have it. That's very much the structure, which is great if you're a clinical year student, because that is so frequently what you are expected to structure your cases around, right? You're rounding with your clinicians that you're working with. And you're like, hey, like, give me the details, give me the data. It's the same structure. So I hope that's helpful. And also, again, as far as the more pragmatic academic approach to the NAVLE, I encourage you to check back because I'm excited about some content that we're working on.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I think it's so important that you gave an example, because I think sometimes, you know, somebody, a teacher, I remember when I was like in school, they would say, oh, you know, break, start with this type of thing first and then that. And you're like, but wait, what if I get this question? What if I get that question? You know, it's hard to apply sometimes what somebody says in practice. So when you gave that example, I think it was awesome, because I think now a lot of students can picture, oh, okay, she gave the blood work as an example. Like, where do I pull that from? You know? So I appreciate that. I want to know more about the application process. I probably should have asked you this before, but how could you be eligible to apply? What is it like? And also, like, I know that there is two kind of windows in the year to take the test. So does that have an impact as well on students, like how they study for things, or like how they should go about taking the test?
Yeah. So let's talk about it, because the application process is certainly, it can be involved. I don't want to say it's difficult, because it's not, it's frankly not. We've really made it, even every year we like streamline, simplify. The reason why the application process, I think, feels a bit daunting to applicants is because you are taking the first step in your licensure process, which is, you know, crazy to think that you're doing that as, you know, frequently, most often as a student, you're like, wait a second, whoa, I'm not ready for any kind of licensure. What does licensure mean, right? So that means that you must take this first step in licensure, which currently looks like going through an approval process through one state. Before we get into that, let's talk about eligibility, because you said that first. I'm trying to think through your question and like, check off my list so I cover all my bases. Just anyone cannot take the NAVLE. You have to be eligible to take the NAVLE. Okay. Sarah, you can edit that out, right?
I think I'll just add it in. I'll keep it in.
Perfect. It adds a certain je ne sais quoi to the content. I love that. So you have to be eligible to take the NAVLE. Who is eligible to take the NAVLE? Within the context of my listeners, most of you are vet students, or you want to be vet students, so you're in a veterinary program. Any individual who is a final clinical year, fourth year student at an AVMA accredited institution and is between 8 and 10 months from graduation is eligible. I have to say 8 to 10 months, because there are a handful of states that have a different timeline. Some are 8 and some are 10. just look at our website and it explains it beautifully. I'm not going to get into those fun semantics here, but you have to be eligible to take the NAVLE. So like, if you're thinking to yourself, well, I've got a little bit more extra free time in my second year, why can't I just sit for the NAVLE in my second year? Because you're not eligible. You have to be eligible to take the NAVLE. You have to be close to graduation to take the NAVLE. The beautiful thing is that for most students in most veterinary schools, you have the ability to sit for the NAVLE. You have the opportunity to sit for the NAVLE twice before you graduate, which is great. You have two chances to take and pass the exam. My husband, who's a lawyer, you have to like graduate law school and then wait and like somehow do it, like work as a lawyer, but you're not licensed or you're not, you know, yet a lawyer because you have to wait until after you graduated to even take the bar exam. And you have to wait even longer to get your score after that. It's crazy. No. In vet school, it's nice because you just take the exam while you're still in your program, which is fantastic. So you have the ability to take it. You have two testing windows that are available. One in November and December. Usually the dates are like mid-November to mid-December. However, with COVID, we have had several expanded testing windows just to account for testing closures and rescheduling testing dates and all that fun stuff, just like the rest of the world. So November, December, and then again in April and May. The April, May window is usually a little bit shorter because it's a smaller pool of candidates who are taking it. And so you can take it in the fall and in the spring. Now, going back to the application itself, you're taking the first step in the licensure process, which means that you have to pick a state currently to get approved through. So I told you guys that the NAVLE is the first step, is the licensing exam. What I didn't say is that the NAVLE is like this product, if you will, this abstract product. And our customer, if you will, for this product is the licensing boards. Every state and province, I always feel so fancy whenever I say province as an American.
That's hilarious.
Province, they're very provincial. Every state and province has a licensing board. So the licensing board is responsible for saying, yep, you've done what you're supposed to do. You are eligible. You are good. You have completed all the requirements. You may come into our state and practice here. Welcome. By the way, you owe us money every year for license renewals or every other year, and you have to get CE, continuing education requirements. That's just the privilege of being a professional, as they say. But in order to become licensed, you have to pass this exam. And so the licensing boards are our customer. The licensing boards have an agreement, a contract with the ICVA to say that they trust and believe and know that this exam is what we say it is. It is an exam looking for the minimum threshold for competency for entry-level practitioners, which is what they need to make sure that people who are coming into their state or province to practice, that they are who they say they are, that they have completed the necessary requirements to do so. So on our website, we break down what does it mean to go through the approval process, all of that. And if you're listening and you're like, wait, I have to pick only one state? What if I don't know where I'm going to end up? What if I don't know where I'm going to get a job? What if I'm going through, you know, the match process and I'm going to do an internship or a residency and you don't find those results out until, you know, close to graduation or that early process? It's actually quite easy to transfer your score from state to state. And you do that with a different organization, a different acronym, shocking to no one, the American Association of Veterinary State, or the, yeah, AAVSB, American Association for Veterinary State Boards, which is an association that supports state boards in the US and Canada. They have a secure score transfer system. So whenever you, Sarah, if you, Sarah, took the NAVLE and passed the NAVLE, a copy of your scores automatically go to the AAVSB, and then a copy of your scores automatically go to the state in which you chose to be approved through. Okay. So then if you say, I chose to be approved through the great state of Missouri randomly, or New York or whatever, what have you, But then you don't end up going to Missouri. You don't end up going to New York, or you go there for a year or two and you move on, like so many of us do. You just basically have the ability to transfer your score from one state to another through the AAVSB. And then you would complete the licensure process in that new state. So for me personally, I have been licensed in 3 states, in Tennessee, Texas, and Georgia. And so I take the test, passed the test, graduated vet school, completed my licensure. I don't even know, actually, I don't even remember if I completed licensure in Tennessee at first. I might not have. And that's the thing, you don't have to. If you're not planning on living and practicing there, you can just say, actually, I'm going to move, you know, in my case, go to Texas. So I moved, transferred my scores to Texas, completed the licensure process in Texas. There's usually fees associated with each individual state. Every state and province is different. Please do not contact me asking me for each individual state's information. Contact your veterinary state board or provincial board for more information on that. And so you basically have the ability to transfer scores after you pass the NAVLE. So I think I covered the bases. And then, like, as far as the application, I need some water.
Yeah, sorry, I'm making you talk a lot, but feel free to take a break if you need.
Thank you. I know, I'm like, oh, my voice sounds so bad. Okay. But the application for the NAVLE from the ICVA on our website, you can literally go on our website and see what it looks like. It's about as easy as can be. We ask, what is your name? Complex. Basically, what is your name from a government issued ID perspective? Make sure that is on a government issued ID. If you've had any changes to your name, that kind of thing, make sure it's on a government issued ID because you need that to take your test. It asks you your current educational category. So if you're a fourth year vet student, that is your educational category. You are a fourth year vet student, and that is an option. Of course, there are individuals who are who are not in AVMA accredited schools, who are taking the test, who are from different countries, you know, all that kind of thing. We have designations for all of that. But if you are a fourth year student, that is a drop-down option. We ask you where you're currently in vet school. That should be fairly easy to answer. We ask you, like, I think your address and phone number. I mean, it's an email address, of course, because that's how you get your scores. It could not be easier to complete the application. And then you just have to pick a state to apply for approval through, which again is all available in more thorough context on ICVA.net.
And so how early do you apply? Let's say you're doing it in November/December. When would you do the application process?
Yeah, beautiful. Love that question. Great question. So applications for the fall testing window, fall being in this hemisphere, I always try to be inclusive and recognize that fall is different in different places in the world. But if you plan on taking the NAVLE in November and December, the application goes live on June 1st. That's just a standard date. June 1st application is available. And then the application deadline, which is even more important, the application deadline is August 1 if you intend to take the NAVLE in November and December. It's really so super important that everyone understand that that's a firm deadline. We do not make exceptions. If we're missing information from you, if you've only done one thing and not the other, there's nothing we can do. You just have to wait until the next testing window, which is a big bummer. And people miss it every year. And it's just heartbreaking. But we make no exceptions. We can't make exceptions because we receive so many applications. So you would apply preferably in June. Don't put it off. Don't wait till July. Who does that? Nobody wants to do that. You're going to apply in June, June or July, well before August. Submit everything. You're going to submit the application and the fees at the same time on our website. Then you get approved, you get a notice and an email that says, congratulations, we have everything we need from you. You are good, you're approved. After that, then several weeks, sometimes it takes a month or so after that, you get what's called a scheduling permit, which is just basically a fancy electronic document that allows you to go online and schedule your test. So it gives you the ability to pick where you want to take the test, pick the date that you want to take the test on within the testing window parameters. Then you would take the test in November or December, whatever date you choose. And then the scores are released in January for everyone.
So in terms of scores, is it, you're saying that the scores can get transferred from state or province. So is, how important are the scores? Because from my perspective, the truth is I thought it was just like a, you passed kind of thing. And then once you pass, that's that. Do people care about the score when you're getting a job?
So my understanding is that they do not. I recognize that I don't speak for the entirety of veterinary medicine. So maybe there is a subset of the veterinary community that does care about the score. If you do, why? But sorry, that might be a little, a little too harsh. But as far as we are concerned, within the realm of the NAVLE and the minimum competency threshold, if you pass, you pass. The number does not matter. We've certainly heard things that maybe some groups might care, but they should not. That should not be taken into consideration. Passing is passing. So the score you get that has been adjusted and taken into consideration, everything, that is the score that you receive. If you pass, that's wonderful. You can complete the licensure process. If not, then you need to take the test again if you intend to become licensed.
Yeah. And in terms of the timeframes, like, you know, obviously in the fall period, there's the holidays usually happen around then. And then the other period was in spring, I believe you said. And so there's also, you know, maybe final exams for school, like university and stuff. So what are the challenges with both? Like, is there a preferred time that people tend to do it, or what does that look like? Like if you're trying to decide?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And in my opinion, it just boils down to, wouldn't you rather have the ability to have two opportunities to take and pass the test before you graduate than only one, you know? So of course, if you have extenuating circumstances, if life does not allow you to take the exam twice before you graduate, if you are on a more traditional schedule where you graduate usually in like May or June, which most schools are, I encourage everyone to take it the first time in the fall, just in case you have a bad day, just in case that there's a blind spot that you didn't necessarily get to spend a lot of time on. You know, if you are a large animal oriented person, that's sort of your thing. The test, like I told you, it has a very large number of small animal questions because that's where most of our graduates are going into, right? If that's the case, if you have a bad day, I think that it's a good thing to be able to give yourself the opportunity to take it again. So for most candidates, give yourself the opportunity to take it twice.
And so, in terms of when to start studying, like, is it one of those things where you apply, you get approved, you're like, now I start? Or when should students start, like the year that they, like the summer before the year they enter their last year?
I think that's a great thing to bring up, and something that I get asked somewhat frequently. The unpopular answer is it's like personal preference. Like, do you feel like you're the kind of person who needs a lot of time to prepare? Do you really want to create like a calendar and kind of focus on things as you go? And then maybe even more important is look at your life and your schedule in the months leading up to this exam. So for me, I had, I think, mostly large animal rotations like in the months leading up to my NAVLE, which is great because the large animal stuff was a little bit more, large animal content was more intimidating to me for preparation for the NAVLE than the small animal. I just had more small animal experience. So I had like I had 2 weeks of overnights, like emergency overnights rotation. And it was great because the hospital was fairly quiet. If we had an emergency, you know, of course I dealt with it and was the student on those cases and was doing treatments and that kind of thing at UT. And then whenever it was quiet and I did have I was in there like 3 a.m. just doing looking over class notes and practicing and trying to make sure I was ready. So I think it's certainly up to you and your preference. I would just say this is a high stakes licensing exam. This is a 360 multiple choice question exam. So do not wait until, you know, 2-3 weeks before and then just try to cram it in. This is not a test to cram for, is what I'm saying. Like, if you're a vet student, you definitely know what it means and how to cram for a test, because many of us, I'm speaking from personal experience, that's just like out of necessity because you are taking so many exams. There's so much pressure and expectation of your time. This test is not something you should cram for. So my suggestion would be at least 3 to 4 months out, taking a big picture view as to where do I need to spend the majority of my time? Am I someone who really needs to brush up on canine internal medicine, parasitology, what have you? That, like, just use your knowledge of yourself, spend some time reflecting, some self-awareness skills there, and say, this is a big exam, maybe the biggest exam I'll take in my life. And when should I, in reality, start preparing for this? It should be months, not weeks.
And in terms of mental health, because I think it's so important to always talk about mental health in the vet industry, it's a huge issue. So how, if a student is so overwhelmed, you know, a school already, maybe they're applying for an internship or they're comparing themselves to their friends or whatever the case may be, what's your advice for those kind of freaking out mentally or emotionally when it comes to the NAVLE?
Yeah, I relate so strongly to that because that was certainly me. And I just feel for those individuals. And I first of all, I want you to know, and this is important. I work for an assessment organization. I work for the NAVLE people. You know, that's what we like to say, or what I say. However, this is a test. There is so much more to life. The value that you put on you as a person, you as a professional, that should not come from this. This does not mean as much in the greater scheme of things. I know I've spent the last, you know, however long hour talking about this is a, you know, high stakes exam and da-da-da-da-da. But this exam does not define you as a person. It does not define you as a professional. None of those things. It is simply a, what I like to consider like a speed bump. That's going to make sure that it kind of gets everybody in check and make sure that everybody can kind of cross over that obstacle before you go out and practice. I completely agree, Sarah. Mental health is such a, I think it should be everything. It's something that we're just kind of considering this like hot topic right now. I don't love that. I think it's like the undercurrent of all of our lives, and especially professionally, something we need to talk about a lot. And coming from a vulnerable place, I'll tell you that I was not academically strong in vet school at all. Like, I was in the bottom, you know, 15-25% pretty much the entire time until I started rotations. I constantly compared myself to my classmates. Constantly compared myself to my close friends who were all brilliant. I was in a very small class of like less than 80, which was great and also challenging because everybody knew everything about everybody. And I just felt like all I needed to do was just walk around, pretend like I was fine, pretend like I was doing okay. And that's just, no, like it's okay if you're struggling, and you're definitely not alone. So as it pertains to this test, absolutely reach out to me, reach out to a trusted faculty member, a faculty advisor, your support system, and don't feel like this is something that you have to go through alone or you have to be afraid of. You know, the NAVLE scores for the fall 2021 testing window came out last week, which means that this week, in January every year, I get a lot of emails from folks who did not pass, and they are really upset and disappointed and frustrated. And also, they're dealing with a lot of shame. There's this process, for better or for worse, definitely for worse, is shrouded in a lot of shame. And I'm working like hell to fix that. I'm trying to add a little bit of humanity to the process and say the thing that I say frequently is that everybody has bad days. And if your bad day coincides with the day that you take the NAVLE, that's okay. it like, does it adjust your timeline a little bit? Does it make life maybe a little bit more complicated than if you just took it and passed the first time? Yes, absolutely. And that sucks. But you are still a person that has an identity and a purpose and incredible things about you that are not at all tied to this test. And I want to emphasize, just like I said in the very beginning, Sarah, this exam does not have any bearing on whether or not you are a veterinarian. You, if you go to vet school, if you're accepted into a vet school and graduate from a vet school, you are a veterinarian. This is a licensing exam. This just, that's all this is. So I just want to make sure that I emphasize the vulnerability piece here, which someone who was just shaking in my boots about taking and passing the NAVLE. And again, being forthcoming and open and honest, I did pass on my first try. I did not break any records with my score, but as I said previously, nobody cares about the number, or at least I don't. So I cannot relate entirely with the folks who don't pass on their first try, but I can relate to the fear and the concern and the shame and all of those things that come with it. And I'm just really trying to rework that. So yeah.
Thank you for saying all that. I think it's so important just to remember, right? Kind of ground yourself in these moments and remember that, you know, we're human and it's okay, right, to struggle a little bit and sometimes.
Exactly. And from a bigger perspective, and this is very off topic of NAVLE, but here I am. Like, we within our profession, I think, tend to tie our identity directly to the fact that we are veterinarians. Like, if someone says, like, oh, you know, Sarah, tell me about yourself. Like, I don't know a whole lot of people out in the world who would say their profession first, or like that would be the only thing that they maybe would say. And within veterinary medicine, I'm seeing a lot of folks who say, you know, I'm a veterinarian. And like, that's the end, the beginning, the middle, and the end. Like, that's what matters. I've been working my whole life for this goal, and this is it. So if you're listening and you're a pre-vet student or you're a vet student, I just really encourage you to think, like, who are you outside of this? Because those are the things that are going to ground you and bring you joy and perspective along the way. So that, I think that's just so important, and something that I'm every day, I'm like, oh my gosh, identity questions. I'm a wife, I'm a mom, I'm a daughter. I am trying to get into gardening, and I'm, you know, I have all these interests and complexities to me that are not necessarily defined by being a vet. And that's amazing and incredible. And I think that if you emphasize that part of you, that will make the NAVLE process much better for you.
Yeah, no, super well put. Thank you. And I asked you tons of questions. So thank you so much for answering them so well. I really appreciate you taking the time to do that. The last quick little questions that we have for you, we always do this at the end of the podcast. It's kind of like a little Q&A about you. Ooh. And yeah, it's really short question answer. So the first one, and I know many people don't know this, so I'm going to say, as of now, what is your ultimate career goal?
Oh my gosh, my ultimate career goal?
I know, it's a big one, but just as of now.
One quick question?
It's true. It was
Oh my goodness. I don't know if I have an ultimate career goal. So I have a mantra. And that mantra is, be who you needed when you were younger. It comes from a guy, Brad Montague, who I don't know if he's Canadian or not. I don't know why I think he's Canadian. He probably isn't. But he, several years ago, came into notoriety for producing these like kid president videos that went viral. I don't know if you remember that, but anyway, be who you needed when you were younger. That's something that I carry with me because as I shared with you, like, I certainly struggled in vet school academically and struggled with how I stacked up to my classmates and what I wanted to do and how I had these like very unusual non-clinical interests. And all my other friends were like, oh yeah, I'm going to be a board certified surgeon, or, oh yeah, I'm going to own my own practice, or, all of these things that they very clearly had their mindset on or their goals mapped out. And that was never me. So my ultimate career goal is that I want to continue being who I needed whenever I was younger. And as long as I'm doing that, I know I'm doing the right thing. So
that's a great question. And you know, what's so funny is you kind of answered my second question as well. I said, my question after this would be, do you have a quote or philosophy that you live by? So you killed two birds with one stone there. My third question would be, who inspires you to continue to make a change within the industry?
Who inspires me to continue to make a change within the industry? So does the answer need to be someone within the industry or
nope. No? Anybody out there.
Okay. Anybody who's listening to this who knows me, they're going to roll their eyes at this answer, but this is just who I am. I thought I had a sneeze. I am continually inspired by Dolly Parton.
That is not what I expected at
all. Well, then, Sarah, this is like your beginning of knowing me. I'm like, she's just sort of like the person that I make references to frequently. And I have like 18 Dolly Parton shirts and I have 2 Dolly Parton candles in my office, which I won't show you. But the reason that I'm inspired by her is because I am very passionate about where I come from. Rural East Tennessee, Appalachia, all of that. But Dolly is extremely true to herself. She does not waver from that. She knows who she is. Everybody else, you know, she'd be danged. Like she knows who she is. And she is steadfast in her desire to build her brand, I guess, or not necessarily build her brand, but like she's ambitious, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like she's constantly taking on new projects, doing new and exciting things. And then whenever it comes down to it, she's also willing to put her support and her time and her money behind things that are meaningful. So if you're familiar, there's a Imagination Library, which gives every child between the ages of 0 to 5 a book every month within like a huge section of the Appalachian footprint in the Southeast. And also, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, she donated a large sum of money to make sure that the Moderna vaccine happened for COVID. So I'm all of those things, those big picture things. I'm a big picture person. I want to represent those things. I want to be true to who I am. I want to maintain my ambition and my drive. And I want to be able to try to make the world a better place in whatever capacity I'm able, which right now looks like helping NAVI candidates, and that's and other big things, hopefully. But yeah.
Love it. Well, thank you so much again. My last question is just, where can people find you? Email, social media, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. The easiest way to find me is, of course, just, you know, email. I am constantly working through my email and getting correspondence from candidates, and please do not hesitate to reach out to me. I love to hear from you guys about anything. emillion@icva.net, which hopefully you can attach to some show notes or what have you, and how to get in touch with me. I'm also on LinkedIn, so look me up, Elizabeth Johnson Million on LinkedIn. And I have a professional Facebook account if you would like to friend me, Elizabeth Johnson Million. I'm not as active on Facebook, but I also want to plug the ICVA YouTube channel, which I'm really excited about, and I'm currently kind of revamping some content. We have videos on there about the application process, videos on there about preparation resources, so the species and diagnoses list, the competency domains, the self-assessments. Those things are so, so, so important. It's all on our YouTube.
So. Awesome. Well, thank you so much again, Dr. Million. We really appreciate you being with us. And a big thank you to our next pod listeners. Remember, you are the future. Join us next month for another in-depth talk.